Hello, and welcome to Community Conversations. These are pre-recorded interviews brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY. Because of ongoing concerns about the COVID pandemic, we are not able to be in the studio doing live broadcast interviews right now. But we are still dedicated to recording and bringing to you topics of local and current interest, highlighting voices from our community. For Community Conversations, we are using phones and web-based technology so that participants can be recorded remotely. Please bear with us if there are any gaps or hiccups that might be caused by a slow or unstable phone or internet connection. Also, keep in mind that because these interviews are recorded, information may change between the time of this recording and the time that you hear it broadcast. Thank you for joining us for today's Community Conversation on KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Now grab a cup of coffee, sit back and enjoy some more of Adventure Number 8 by Jim Chappelle, and then we'll get on with today's show. I'm your host for today's Community Conversation, Phil Huff, and I'm joined by my co-host, Julie Calamine. Good morning, Julie.
Well, good morning, Phil, and welcome back. You've been away for a while.
I know. It was my summer vacation, and in the summer of COVID, we recreate responsibly by staying in our own backyards, in this case, our watery backyards, and my wife, Deb, and I took a two-week paddling trip all in Bonner County.
On the big lakes, not the little lakes. Tell us where you were.
We spent a week on Priest Lake and Upper Priest Lake, paddling from Kalispell Island up to the northern end and back, and exploring nooks and crannies and coves and having a good old time. And then we took a day off, as we do on our longer trips, and did laundry and restocked up on food and went over to Lake Ponderay and paddled around that eastern arm of Lake Ponderay. And if you've never been down there on a boat that's self-propelled, you don't really realize how big this lake is. But 64 miles around the eastern arm in 6 days, looking up at the mountains and just enjoying everything about it.
That sounds wonderful, Phil. Must have been a great, relaxing trip. I'm so happy for you.
It was a lot of fun.
Good to hear it. My main event in your absence was receiving 15 cords of firewood, which we'll now have to cut up. Who would you rather be, listeners? Well, with that, Phil and I are caught up, and I'd like to introduce our guests for today. And the first guest is Kira Sitari, and Kira is the Regional Communications Manager for Idaho Fish and Game. Hello, Kira.
Hello, Julie. Hi, Phil. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and it's a welcome back. We've had Kira on the show before, but we have a new voice today, and I'd like to introduce Robert Akins. And Robert is Habitat Biologist and Wildlife Management Area Manager for Idaho Department of Fish and Game. Hello, Robert.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, good to have you here. We're great. So, as usual, we'd like to begin by having you each tell us a bit about yourselves, your backgrounds, and how you came to be doing the work that you do here for Idaho Fish and Game. Let's start with you, Robert.
Well, I started my working life in the Army. I did 9 years in the military. And through that, I also worked construction. That was That was a good time. Did a couple deployments overseas. After my second deployment to Iraq, I decided I wanted to go to college. And I went to college at Boise State University, got my degree in biology with an emphasis in ecology, and started working for Fish and Game down in the Idaho Falls region at Market Lake Wildlife Management Area, and just moved up here about a month ago.
Oh, you are really new to the area then. So,
welcome to the neighborhood.
Yes, and how is it that you decided to move from southern Idaho up here to the Panhandle?
Well, my wife's family actually lives up here in Coeur d'Alene. We're a little farther north than that, but it's good to be up closer to her family. She is very happy about that after living several years not close to family. But also getting a promotion and moving up in the organization is pretty fantastic as well.
So tell us a little bit about that. What's your new job?
Well, I am a habitat biologist. So far, I've been mostly focused on learning what my job actually is. We've been working mostly up at Boundary Smith Creek WMA. Just finished up a big project up there right before I started. And going into maintenance mode on that project, learning as much as I can about it. And here at MacArthur, it's been learning what's been going on and just trying to keep it running so far.
Now, we want to hear a little bit more about each, but as I recall, the Boundary Smith Creek, isn't that the Bees to Bears project area?
Yes, it is.
It's a pretty broad range of stuff for a biologist to work on.
It is. It's interesting learning about it. I haven't learned as much about it as I want to yet. I am currently putting together a management plan specifically for that project to be able to continue into the future, keeping it functional and trying to keep everything going.
You know it. Well, we're going to get much more deeply into the two wildlife management areas here in the Panhandle that you work with, but we'll come back to Kira for a minute because we haven't really introduced you yet. So, Kira, tell us about your job, your background, how you came to be here in the Panhandle.
So I'm the Regional Communications Manager, as Julie mentioned. I actually came up as a little fish biologist in Fish and Game. My first job with the department was chasing perch around Lake Cascade, and then I got to spend a season working a fish trap out on the Middle Fork of the Salmon River out at Big Creek Taylor Ranch Wilderness Field Station. And I was totally hooked on Idaho. I was not going to go back home to Minnesota anytime soon. So I wound up staying in Idaho. I was a biologist for several years up here in Coeur d'Alene. And a little over a year and a half ago, I jumped over to the communications side. I think it's a great fit. I get a little bit of creativity and writing and working with community groups. So that's how I landed here in communications with Fish and Game.
And it's a great background to come on the radio show.
Yes.
So, Robert, tell us a little bit more before the show, and I'm sure our listeners would love to hear, your new job comes with some new housing.
Yes, it does. My wife and I are staying at the property at MacArthur Lake. It's a pretty nice little house, got a great view of the lake and a set of train tracks about 75 yards away.
So it sounds a lot like Thoreau's Cabin, which was also about 75 yards from the railroad track back in the 1800s and 3 miles from Concord. And so I'm picturing a modern day Thoreau. Is it anything at all like that?
No, I think the house was probably built sometime in the 70s.
Yeah, so much different from the Thoreau times, and I imagine you've got nicer amenities. I'd like to bring us back around to wildlife management areas and what they are. You know, there are so many kinds of public lands, and I'd just like to have a better understanding of what a wildlife management area is as compared to all of our other types of public lands. Who would like to take that one? Kira.
Yeah, so it's a good question to start with, Julie. Wildlife management areas are state-owned areas that are used for managing wildlife habitats and wildlife recreation opportunities. So many of our wildlife management areas are used in to complement other public access areas. So like here in the Panhandle, we have a lot of public land that's at higher elevation. A lot of the Forest Service is higher up in the mountains. So many of our WMAs here in the Panhandle are lower valley bottoms that maybe didn't have public access and wildlife habitat protection. So that is one piece of it. Another piece of wildlife management areas that we get a lot of questions about is what's the difference between a management area and, say, a wildlife preserve? Wildlife management areas are made for wildlife recreation, and being owned by Fish and Game, they are managed for hunting, fishing, and trapping opportunities. I know a lot of folks have been getting out during COVID and using our wildlife management areas who maybe didn't use them before. So that's awesome. I mean, they are made for birders and for viewing wildlife. That's great. Folks are getting out. But a lot of folks need to realize these were paid for by sportsman dollars in many cases. So hunting and fishing licenses and also excise tax money on hunting and fishing equipment. So MacArthur Lake is a good example that was paid for by sportsmen's dollars, and that's who we manage for primarily. Another way these are funded, especially in the Ponderay region, is mitigation money. So Albany Falls Dam went in. We lost a lot of wildlife habitat when the lake came up, and a lot of kind of shoreline habitats were inundated. So wildlife management areas were created to kind of compensate for that.
I see. So what I'm hearing you saying is that these lands are really meant to be used for fish and game resources, developing the wildlife, and then also maybe harvesting it.
Yeah, you got it, Julie.
Yeah, okay. Another question about them. I'm wondering, do wildlife management areas exist in every state? Are they everywhere or just in certain states?
Well, I know... at least I can't speak for every single state, but I will say states like Washington and Montana both have wildlife management areas. They can be funded differently. Washington, for example, their Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife is funded by general taxes. So everyone's paying into wildlife management area funding compared to Idaho, which is funded by sportsmen and women. So they can have a little different slant on their goals. And even within our wildlife management areas, they have different goals and different objectives.
And there's quite a few of them around. We've touched on a couple that Robert's mentioned, and we'll come back to those. But give us a sense of the number in your area, how large they are, how significant they are, too, beyond their size.
Sure. So we have... six in the Panhandle, six WMAs. Robert, I actually don't know how many we have total in the states, but they range a lot in different sizes. MacArthur, for example, is up to 1,200 acres. I actually don't know what our total number of acres in WMAs are in the Panhandle. I do know that Fish and Game manages less than 1% of the area in the Panhandle, and we're charged with managing 100% of the wildlife. So that can be kind of a big challenge, not owning all of the land that these habitats are needed. And to your question, Phil, about, you know, the importance of these areas, like I said, they are kind of made to maybe fill a special niche that aren't represented in other public protected lands. Like wetlands is a particularly a big one up here. So they're managed for a lot of high diversity areas where you can protect a lot of animals in a small space.
Yeah, I was thinking specifically of, and I'm glad you went there, the funding that went into some of the management areas along the Pack River resulting mm-hmm. from the mitigation dollars, and of course the focus on wetlands that had been lost or at risk of loss. And those areas are so important, and what a diminishing resource as we see development crop up around a big system like Lake Ponderay. These areas are really critical as reservoirs for the wildlife that are managed throughout the region.
Right. And I mean, the Pack River, you saw this firsthand, Phil, if you were out paddling in that area. We want people out there using those areas and noticing the wildlife, especially the eastern arm of the lake that you were paddling is set aside for migrating waterfowl. If people aren't there out there, you know, observing the wildlife, you won't notice if something's wrong or disappearing. So we're really happy that folks are out there using these areas right now and using the resource.
Yes, definitely. I've been to the MacArthur Wildlife Management Area, and there are often other users there when I am there. Kira, earlier you mentioned that the funding here in Idaho is often from sportsmen or mainly from sportsmen fees and licenses. However, we know that other species benefit in addition to our game species. And so with this, I would like to get back to Robert and have him start to tell us about the two wildlife management areas that you, Robert, manage and what we might find in them, the wildlife, the habitats. So which one would you like to start with, Robert?
Well, I'd like to start with MacArthur Lake, right outside my back door. Right now, my wife and I go out in the morning before work and drink coffee, and we've seen a couple deer coming by just about every morning. There's elk across the lake from us that we bring out the spotting scope to check out, and there's lots of songbirds nesting in the trees. Still trying to learn some of my northern songbirds. Like I said earlier, wildlife species are a little different up here as well as plant species. But definitely going to see a lot of waterfowl. We are going to start some banding operations here in the near future, get some bands out on waterfowl. So that's going to be a fun little adventure for us. So MacArthur Lake also has a somewhat diverse warm water fish population. We don't really manage for the fish, but they're there, and we want people to enjoy that resource as well. We've got some bass, bluegill, perch. In the spring, we can get some runs of trout migrating through the lake, coming up through Deep Creek and up into the small tributaries above the lake. So that's MacArthur Lake on my end so far. Boundary Smith Creek. I have actually seen a grizzly bear up there this year, which was pretty exciting. Working down in Region 6, we've got a lot of grizzly bears, but not in the area that I was working. So it was my first day up here, touring around on the WMA with my boss, and just happened to be a grizzly bear walking around, so I was pretty excited about that. We've got that Feed the Bears project going up there. We are trying to accommodate the largest possible species base through that project. Currently, we're seeing a lot more of the bumblebees that we wanted to affect. There's three of them that are, species of greatest conservation need. So in the grass ford plots that we've planted up there, and we're planning on doing some good management on, we're seeing a lot more of the bumblebees. Got a lot of different species of forbs coming up, lots of different flowers. You can take a walk out into those areas. They're actually really pretty right now. Lots of wildflowers coming up. I enjoy walking around, but I have other reasons to walk around other than just looking at flowers.
Although flowers are an important part of bees to bears management. Robert, for listeners who aren't exactly sure where the Boundary Smith Creek wildlife management area is, it's basically right on the Canadian border, right?
Yes, you can throw a rock across Boundary Creek and it'll land in Canada. So it's right up there on... Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
All right. It's right up on the Kootenai River where Boundary Creek meets the Kootenai River, and that's the corner of the WMA, and it runs along Boundary Creek for quite a ways, and it's an interesting location. My cell phone likes to tell me I'm in Canada.
I think one of the things that's interesting about the two locations you're responsible for is that their role in creating linkages. The MacArthur Lake is right at the pinch points where the Selkirks and Cabinets meet. And of course, the Boundary Creek, not just the boundary between the U.S. and Canada, but also in the valley bottom between major mountain ranges. Tell us about the connectivity and how that contributes to the diversity and the work that you do.
So here at MacArthur Lake, we do get a lot of animals crossing through the valley bottom here. It is the closest area between the two mountain ranges. The elk come through here quite a bit. We have a lot of deer that migrate through. Of course, the bears are using it as well.
Yes. And so it's the closest point between the Selkirks and the Cabinets. So that is an important connection for wildlife that want to get from one mountain area to the other. And I imagine the same is true with the Boundary Smith, in that I believe, if I have this correctly, it's wanting to be or is part of the Y2Y connectivity project, trying to link north to south with species, the big species that need to migrate. Is that true?
Yes, it is. So, it is an important area for wildlife migration from north to south. We get a lot of movement of grizzly bears through the area. They have been moving south. We also, of course, are getting wolves that move through the area from north to south and from south to north. It also is a little bit of a migration area for mule deer that move through the area as well. They move through the valley bottoms through the winter.
Yeah, very good. And if I understand correctly, Boundary Smith is not the easiest wildlife management area to access. Is that also true? How do we get there?
Oh, it's out there a little ways. It takes me about an hour and a half to get there from my office here at MacArthur Lake. You take 95 north until you hit 1, and you take Highway 1 up until you see the sign for Boundary Smith Creek. Can't remember the name of the road. I believe it's West Side Road.
West Side Road.
But you're not going to get there from Port Hill, correct? You would have to cross water.
Correct. You would have to come down 95 from Port Hill.
Got it. Well, what else do we want to know about these two wildlife management areas? Are there other interesting species we might be able to visit or look for, whether they would be plant or animals? Tell us some more reasons why it would be worth a visit for the listeners.
So Boundary Smith Creek, as I'm learning it, we're actually finding a lot of huckleberry patches up there. They are not quite ready yet, but I'm guessing in the next couple weeks that'll be a good area to go up and pick some huckleberries. Boundary Creek I have found it to be a pretty decent little fishing spot. Gotta head up the creek a little ways. It's after it flattens out on the WMA, it's it's not as good of fishing, but you head up the creek, up the mountain a little bit, and there's a lot better trout fishing up there. The burbot run up Boundary Creek in the winter. So it'd probably be a good place if you can get back there to do a little burbot fishing as well. A lot of different songbird species are up there right now. Been seeing a lot of woodpeckers. Mostly northern flickers this time of year is what I've been seeing. Waterfowl are getting ready to get their broods flying, so it'll be fun to get up there, watch those little ducklings learn to fly. They'll start migrating out here in the next few months.
Well, that's a lot.
So are there things that people should know in this time of COVID about facilities or hours or special precautions if they visit either of the areas or really any of the wildlife management units on the Panhandle?
So during COVID, we have actually seen an increase in users since about March. The only thing we ask is you maintain social distancing while you're out there.
Easy enough.
All of our facilities are open.
It ought to be easy to do. I've visited MacArthur. I've never been to the Boundary Smith Wildlife Management Area, but MacArthur is certainly big enough to maintain some distance and enjoy yourself. I've never felt like I was surrounded by crowds there. Well, is there anything else we're missing on these two wildlife management areas before we start grilling Kira about what's new with Idaho Fish and Game?
I can't think of any right now, but I might chime in with something a little bit later.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to have you back on after your first winter.
Yes.
I will just note that last year we did do a drawdown of MacArthur Lake. So every 5 to 7 years or so, they drop the lake level and let those soils breathe a little bit. The wildlife crews do a ton of work on weed management and planting native species. So even if you haven't been out to MacArthur Lake this year, it might be worth going to check out because there's more plants out there, more waterfowl expected to stop over, there's more forage available, so and even just new plants to go identify. So that is something folks should be aware of, that drawdown happens, and it just got rejuvenated, so it's a very cool spot.
Very cool. And if you are visiting MacArthur, you can always check out the Wyman Preserve, which is north of that, so it does expand the area for exploring. It's beautiful. Well, Kira, let's find out what we need to know about Idaho Fish and Game. What's been going on this summer that folks would want to hear about?
Sure. So the big one I wanted to note as we kick things off is we're starting to run into some bear conflicts in northern Idaho. Tends to happen every year, but Brian Johnson, our grizzly bear biologist, wanted me to remind folks that we live in bear country. Both black bears and grizzly bears can be found, just as Robert observed, up on Boundary Smith or in downtown Sandpoint. So we just want to remind folks to keep attractants locked up, keep your grills clean and your garbage secured. You know, if you start noticing bears in your backyard, maybe take out the bird feeders and the dog food. And then when you're out picking huckleberries, make sure you're bear aware, you're making noise, you're hiking in groups, then you carry bear spray. Brian told me he had a busy June with bear calls. July was pretty quiet, and then it's starting to pick up again now with fruit trees coming online.
And good advice as we head into the fall season when they're trying to fatten up on the huckleberries, which seem to be very ripe and plentiful this time of year.
Exactly. I'll note, so for your Sandpoint listeners, we've had a bull moose that's been hanging up around the Harrison Lake campground. Hasn't had any problems with people, but has stumbled through camp. It trampled a tent. So make sure you're paying attention to any signage that the Forest Service puts out, and be aware that you might see that bull moose hanging around at Harrison Lake. Keep space and please don't feed it.
Yes, don't feed the moose. Makes sense. Kira,
I know grizzly bears like strike a ton of fear in people's hearts, but moose are way more dangerous and they make our biologists much more nervous out in the field.
Yeah, I believe it. On my list, I have alpine surveys. What are alpine surveys?
Yeah, so this has been, I believe it's the second year of alpine surveys. This is a big effort in the whole state to survey alpine areas, just get a big, broad idea of wildlife diversity in these areas that could be affected by climate change. They are considered the most vulnerable areas, some of the most vulnerable areas in Idaho. So we're trying to get kind of a baseline inventory of what's up there. And Idaho, and I should say the Panhandle, has a kind of a jump start because we did the multi-species baseline initiative a few years ago. So the alpine surveys, I should ask, Robert, did you do any alpine surveys?
I have not done any alpine surveys.
All right. They didn't let me go up on any of these either, but I mean, they're surveying from everything from pika to birds and big game that they see up there. They're doing vegetation surveys. So it's a really broad grab of what is basically up on these mountain peaks.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating topic. And I know in the Panhandle, not only with the multi-species baseline, but the establishment several decades ago of some of the research natural areas were largely centered around some of those high alpine lakes and really unique systems.
Yeah, it always amazes me how different a lake is that's been stocked with fish versus not stocked with fish. Even those lakes that don't have fish in can be fun to just go snorkel and see what kind of amphibians you run into.
So that's a good segue into one of the topics we wanted to hopefully cover, which was the walleye, which may not have exactly been a stocked species, but it's one that's certainly been introduced. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, so we are basically in our second year of kind of a pilot suppression program for walleye. We're looking at ways that we can use anglers to help keep walleye populations down. We're not going to be able to get rid of all the walleye in Lake Ponderé. They're non-native species. They came down from Noxon Reservoir. And our fisheries biologists believe they're a threat to our existing fisheries like kokanee, because they're predators that can eat a lot of kokanee. The big news for this summer has been we have this walleye lottery where people can turn in walleye heads that they've caught, and some of these walleye are implanted with a tiny microscopic reward tag. So we had these tagged fish swimming around Lake Ponderé for a whole year. The program was going, no one won these tagged fish, couldn't find them. Over 400 fish heads got turned in, no winners. And then every month this summer has had a new walleye winner. So we've had $4,000 given out for $1,000 prizes. So, and most recently Doug Lambrecht of Sandpoint caught $1,000 walleye in the month of July. So we're excited that people are catching fish.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Not only do you get to eat those walleye, which Kira, you and I know are delicious, and now Sandpointians know, but you could win $1,000, a real incentive.
Yeah.
Cool. Another one, early collared deer, elk, and moose findings. Tell us about that.
Right. So the Unit 1, our Game Management Unit 1, is basically all the area north of the Ponderé River and Lake Ponderé. These got a new round of collared animals in them that our biologists have been tracking for a big North Idaho large mammal ecology study. So this spring we put out a bunch of collars on deer, elk, and moose, and then also on predators like wolves and mountain lion. And we're just starting to see how these animals kind of move around each other and what they're, how they're dying and what they're eating. So a lot of cool information. I haven't gotten the latest data download. The last look I got, the does that we had collared around Priest Lake had had their fawns, and our biologists were able to go out and get collars on some of those fawns even. So now we have multiple generations of collared ungulates to follow and study. And those little baby deer are some of the most vulnerable game animals that we have. So that's really good information of how we can help those animals survive.
That's interesting. And those baby deer are so darn cute too. So it'll be fun to keep track of what's happening with the little babies. Neat.
It was such, I geek out on this stuff, but it was amazing to me to see some of these does. Most of them traveled to really secluded areas to have their fawns. Just the most remote areas north of Upper Priest Lake. And then one of these does came over from the Priest River up and over the Selkirk to have her fawn in basically a sandpoint backyard. She decided that was the safest spot for her. So just individual animal decision making is some of the cool stuff we get to see.
It's good to remember we live in not just the wildland urban interface, but that wildlife urban interface.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to bring up a topic that, I hope you're, I don't want to blindside you for what you're not prepared for, but you probably are able to talk about this. This year has presented some unique challenges for managing wildlife, particularly with the question of out-of-state travel, people coming in or going out. And I believe there's been, and I'm not even sure where it's at right now, first a restriction on licenses issued to out-of-state non-residents, and then that was lifted and then imposed again. Where are we at with licensing for the fall hunting season?
That is all a green light. My understanding was that there was a restriction initially in the spring, basically when the first lockdown order came on. We weren't issuing any more licenses for spring bear or spring turkey. So that's where a lot of non-residents ran into issues. And then that was lifted. Those restrictions didn't affect any of the fall hunts. What has restricted some non-resident fall hunts is the number of tags available. Our non-resident deer and elk tags have sold out for the second year in a row, which was not a phenomenon that happened 5 years ago. A lot of folks came to expect an over-the-counter tag when they just showed up here, and that's just not available anymore. Go ahead, Phil.
Oh, I was going to say, that's good clarity. So that explains the contradictory information I've been hearing. It's not that they're restricted other than that they've sold out. They're limited.
Right. Yeah. The number of non-resident tags didn't change in response to COVID. They have just been increasing in popularity basically since the recession started easing up since 2008. We've just gotten more and more non-residents. And just like last year, our deer and elk tags sold out again.
Well, good news for Idaho Fish and Game, more revenues for the state and the wildlife department. So good for you all. Well, as we come to the end of our program, is there any other big topic we should cover, Kira, or shall we just go ahead and conclude?
The one thing that I wanted to note that I didn't mention, we are stocking pheasants up at the Boundary Smith Creek WMA. We haven't done that in the past. It's kind of a new opportunity. So there'll be about 600 roosters stocked up at the WMA. I know folks are using the WMAs for viewing and hiking. Know that fall hunts are starting to come online. Some of our controlled elk hunts have already started. Archery season kicks off next month. So just be aware that there are other users out in the woods, and make noise, make yourself known. Enjoy your time outside.
Well, thank you,
well,
Kira.
Great. Well, I think that's a great way to bring this interview to a conclusion. I would like to thank you both, Kira Sitari, Regional Communications Manager, and Robert Akins, Habitat Biologist and Wildlife Manager Wildlife Management Area Manager here at Idaho's Department of Fish and Game. Thank you both. Thank you, Kira, and thank you, Robert, for joining us.
Yes, thank you both.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. And until next week, this has been Community Conversations. And as always, these are recorded shows that by the time you air, things could have changed, although I'm not sure there's a lot of information we've gone over today that will change in the next few days. If you missed any or part of this and would like to listen to it all, it will be available as a podcast on krfy.org.